Hello, this is RDY with a quick message before we begin this episode of Torah Smash. This episode was recorded before October 7th, and so there will be no acknowledgement of the atrocities committed by Hamas in Israel last week. We do want to let the people of Israel know that they are in our prayers. No one deserves the violence that is occurring. There is no excuse. We support Israel and hope that you do too, including her Palestinian citizens, who are far different from the terrorist group Hamas. While we pray for peace and hope for the best from the situation, we acknowledge that if we stop laughing, stop pointing out the things in life that are fun and nerdy and everyday, if we cease to live our lives with joy, that is exactly how Hamas wins. And so with that in mind, we pray for the peace of Israel. Am Yisrael Chai.
Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I am Barak Malkin, and joining me today are...
Ethan Lane Miller.
RDY.
Today, we are going to explore one of my favorite fictional characters of all time, Indiana Jones. Are we indie fans here?
Yes.
Huge. Huge.
Excellent.
When I was growing up in Cincinnati, there were two movies that we had on VHS, and both of them featured Kiwi Kwan. And so they were clearly Goonies and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Nice. Very fun. Yeah, they're... For RDY's sister, Susan, I don't think she watched everything with you, but there have been five official movies, a TV series, chapter books, comic books, a great live-action theme park show, and I also finally remember the pinball game based on the original trilogy. The newest property being Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which recently finished up in theaters and will likely be streaming by the time this episode is released. Have we seen the most recent one?
I have. Yeah. I have not.
Camp will do that to you.
It will. As of the recording of this episode, camp is over. Ooh. And so it's just in time for a good number of the movies I missed are going to be coming out on streaming over the next month. So I'm very excited to do my catch-up homework.
Nice. We should do an episode called Ethan and the Summer Movie Catch-Up.
Yes, that'd be pretty funny. I've got a lot.
So the Ethan and Susan... The Dial of Destiny's main adventure plot is focused on the Antikythera mechanism, which they also refer to as Archimedes' dial, even though there is no conclusive proof in the real world on who created it. In the movie, they credit the Antikythera with being able to, quote, change the course of history. So on this theme of being able to change your destiny, what Jewish word or concept do we think is the smash to Indiana Jones and this Dial of Destiny?
When we go back in time and kill baby Thanos?
No. How's that the Jewish smash?
Oh, man. Is it something about like Moses saying no the first time he was asked by God?
Ooh, it's a good guess, but it's not. I can give you a quick hint. I said Jewish word. It's technically a Yiddish word.
The only Yiddish words I know are not usable on a family podcast. Mm. Shmata.
That's a good one.
No. For Jason, a shmata is what you would wrap an artifact that Indiana Jones would find. He usually wraps them in a shmata.
And schmutz is usually what Indiana Jones is covered in.
So today we're going to be looking at the Yiddish word beshert. Beshert is translated as inevitable or preordained. The term can apply to any occurrence that seems to have divine providence, like bumping into someone you were just thinking about. But it is most often used as a way to explain a pair of people who were meant to fall in love or are perfect for each other. So let's just start with this idea of beshert or destiny versus free will. What does Judaism have to say about it?
I think that you will find many people answering this differently, but in Deuteronomy, it clearly says, I have set before you the good and life and the evil and bad, and choose good, which very many of us see as a declaration of human free will. So I hold free will higher than destiny, dial or no.
I've kind of always believed that while, and this is me speaking personally, that while we have free will, there are certain, I guess to call it back, there are certain canon events that will take place in our life. And there are certain decision points placed in front of us that are perhaps fated. So we still have the choice, but that there are certain destinies in terms of decisions we have to make, which you could say is a cop-out, but I disagree.
There are certain points of destiny that are cop-outs, like we have to go through high school and we have to pick a college, and you know, like those kind of things would be a cop-out, but there are canon events that would not be cop-outs, like when we meet our intended, assuming there is only one for each person.
Or that each person has one.
Or that each person has one. Thank you.
Right. So we have these two possibilities. We have destiny or free will. So either everything is determined by God, or human beings can be held accountable or rewarded for their own actions. I think from what I found, Judaism teaches us that both divine destiny and free choice both exist and are not mutually exclusive. There's one example I found, a biblical story of Joseph. Joseph dreamed that his brothers would bow to him. The brothers then viewed Joseph as a threat and they planned to kill him, but in the last moment, they instead sold him as a slave. Follow the story many years later. Joseph became the viceroy of Egypt, and in the end, his brothers did indeed bow to him. So was that due to this preordained destiny through Joseph's vision, or was it that the choices that were made inevitably brought you to this point and it wasn't destiny, it just happenstance?
I think that's all fine and good. Can you give us a historical example?
I don't know. You know, I'll say that for me, this falls under the idea that if we do believe in God, we can't possibly understand everything, right? Because the overlap of destiny versus free will sort of makes my head hurt. But I do have mixed feelings that I get to make my own choices. And yet, I also think that everything happens for a reason. Like maybe we're in like a Zelda game about there's really going to be points and storylines that you will encounter. You know, maybe that's like lifespan or opportunities, etc. But you have the room for free choice. And now we're in a discussion of free choice, but that was in our Mass Effect 3 episode. So go back and listen to that. But I have these complicated overlaps of that idea.
There's a theology called process theology. It's the brainchild of Dr. Bradley Shavit Artson, a rabbi in Los Angeles, phenomenal scholar, wonderful teacher. And he talks about how the common belief as far as choice is concerned and whether there's destiny is very often put in the form of the triangle with, you know, the benevolent God that is omnipresent, meaning always there, omniscient, meaning all knowing, and omnipotent, meaning all powerful, that, you know, the idea that a benevolent God could not be all three. And his process theology says that the very phrase all powerful takes away all of our choice. And
yeah,
that if God is all powerful, then everyone else has no power by definition of the word. And so one of the things that God does to make God all powerful is to grant us power. And that power is choice. And so in that choice, God also gives up omniscience of the future, because God can know the past and the present. But if God does not know our choices because God has given us that power, then God's omniscience only lasts up until now.
See, I was going to ask, do we have true free will, but God already knows all the choices we're going to make?
Or the choices we could make. But the same thing is true about us as parents and teachers, that, you know, when we ask our students questions, it's good teaching to know the answers and to say, like, I'm going to ask you this question. I know the answers that you are probably going to say, and I have responses to all of these answers. And every once in a while we get surprised, but that's, you know, considered good pedagogy, is to not let the students run the classroom.
Yeah. I think that if you use that student teacher, right, the teacher has a fuller understanding of what is happening or where the endpoint is going to be, and the students don't, but the students can also teach and vice versa. But it's still, I think it goes, but I'm so conflicted about this. The Bichert idea exists, and so there's some sort of preconceived destiny somehow. So the overlap of this free choice is often confusing for me, but I sit somewhere in this heavy middle, and I don't know if this conversation is going to end up swinging me one way or the other.
Yeah, RDY, I feel like you both like gave me things to think about and limited the things. Like, I think going back to my question, is it free will if there's an omnipotent creature who already knows the choice that we're going to make?
I don't think God knows the choices that we are going to make. I think God knows the options and that it's still up to us to choose. You know, like if you give someone a true false question, you obviously know the options. And even with like Schrodinger's cat, when it's both dead and alive, that's still three choices. So when it comes to knowing, you know, the analogy between teaching and knowing the options that our students have, we give them the multiple choice on a test, which means they can only choose as many choices as we give them. And sometimes a kid will write in an answer if that kid is, you know, just sharp enough to find something that fits the answer that the teacher hasn't thought of. And I would say that in my personal theology, God has thought of those possibilities as well.
Yeah, I think this falls still under my, like, we can't possibly comprehend what God knows or thinks if we believe in the God. And so that's the complicated part.
For sure.
I'm going to jump to, Ethan has not seen the fifth one, but we've all seen the original, the first four, the original three, and then the added fourth one.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump us back to the original Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Have you all heard about the theory about the first movie that it could have still happened without Indiana Jones?
100%. I love that.
Oh, yeah. I have.
Have you heard
Please
this? So the theory is
he's totally that, superfluous.
Yeah, that he is not necessary for the story to contain. That the Nazis would have still gotten the medallion for Marion. They would have gotten the correct location from the map room and found the Ark and then opened it and died anyway. So thoughts?
But
yeah, I have a but for this also. It's okay.
It wouldn't have ended up in the museum.
There's two butts. I have two butts.
Killing the mouse.
And killing the mouse?
Or making it...
In the middle of the scene. Yeah, I gotcha. The other piece of this is that... And we'll jump into this and then we'll go back to thoughts on his destiny. The famous fight scene with the propeller plane in the first Indiana Jones. That caused them not to fly the Ark out of the area and then said they had to drive it. And then they drove it to the port and took a submarine. They would have flown it straight to Berlin. Because they did not fly it straight to Berlin, when they got off the submarine, Belloc had convinced them to open the Ark and said like something along the lines of, wouldn't you prefer we opened it now instead of in front of Hitler? Because if it's nothing, then you don't want to do that in front of Hitler. So I would say that not only would it not have killed the mouse, that they would have opened it and not just died anyway, it would have killed Hitler. And then World War II would have ended almost 10 years earlier. So I would say that his actions hurt history as a whole. But overall, I think that Indy does sort of change the progression of the story just because of that fact of it would have been just flown directly to Berlin as opposed to opened in some remote island. And then the U.S. might not have gotten it at the end anyway, hidden in some their giant warehouse.
Unless it was destined, and if he wasn't there, then the plane wouldn't have worked anyway.
Right. It's very like it was a tiny plane. I don't know where they were going to make just carry it underneath. Maybe it wouldn't have made it all the way. They had the submarine location like prepped. Right. They said we have all your prerequisites that you requested ready for you, sir. So who knows? But as far as we know, I think he does have an impact. RDY, you like this theory that he is superfluous?
I did until you reminded me of the airplane fight.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's nice. It's nice to have a purpose. I'm glad that
that Indiana does.
Yeah.
I'm still processing that Indiana Jones didn't need to be in the Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, just initially. And I went through, I tried to look at the other ones. The other ones, he definitely makes an impact in the process of it, like who was going to happen to what and et cetera. Temple of Doom, absolutely. Last Crusade, yes, because if he wasn't part of this adventure, then they never would have gotten the second part of the map from the diary.
Yeah. Is there a Torah story where the main character is actually kind of not needed?
That's an interesting thought.
That is a good question.
Yeah. I think Noah needed to be there for the Ark. I think Moses needed to be there for the burning bush.
For sure. I think Isaac doesn't need to be anywhere in his stories.
That's interesting.
Isaac is a prop for the binding of Isaac, and he and his father never speak again after that, and he doesn't really do anything on his own except things that his father has already done. I have a colleague who during rabbinical school suggested that Abraham and Isaac were the same person, that Isaac was really just Abraham disguising himself to be younger. While I disagree with that, I think Isaac is mentally divergent and needed to be cared for in a different way, which makes my statement that Isaac was unnecessary sound a lot worse. But he doesn't do anything to push the narrative forward. Rebecca does that.
You've mentioned your Isaac theory a bunch of times in this show, and I'm looking forward to the episode where we dive into it.
See also my upcoming High Holy Day sermons.
Ooh. When does this episode come out?
Previous High Holiday sermons is the time of this episode drops.
Right.
Yeah.
Go back and watch.
Yeah.
Stream Artie Wise High Holiday Sermon at
KAMII.org.
I'm trying to think of other Jewish heroes in Jewish history and seeing if there's another that's not needed. It's a great question. Listeners, if you think of any, please email us torsmash@gmail.com.
It could easily be argued that like 8 of the spies are unnecessary.
Yeah, but they're not named.
They're all named.
Oh, they're all named? Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll have to come back to that one. I like that question a lot. Don't have an answer. So my next question is just, do you all have instances of Beshert in your own lives?
Oh my God, for sure.
Go on.
I got to think of the right one to share, though. Yeah, okay, I know which one. So I just finished my freshman year of college. And I came back home and I applied. Yes. I applied to work as a counselor at the JCC in Dallas. And this was going to be my first Jewish summer camp experience. Now, obviously, given where I am today and what I do, this is a pretty dang important thing. And so I did this interview. And then, like, 2 days later was my synagogue's like end of the school year picnic. And so I was chatting with my religious school director. And I said, oh, I just interviewed for this job at the JCC. I'm hoping to hear back soon. And she goes, oh, that's really interesting. Turns around and taps a woman on the shoulder and goes, hey, you're still working at the JCC, right? And she goes, yeah. And goes, Ethan just applied for a job at camp. And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm actually going up there after this to go finalize the last group of hires. So I got the job and the rest was history.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Shout out to Valerie Klein and Helene Burke.
Hey, I would say similarly in the acquisition of current jobs theme, I too have had many moments of Beshert in my life. And so going for the most recent one, in 2021, I took a course on getting certified as an interim rabbi, not because I wanted to leave my job, but because I believed that in 2021, we were all interim rabbis, that there was so much change going on in the world that we needed the skills of interim rabbis to really deal with what our congregations were going through at the time. And so I got certified as an interim rabbi. And when the first round of interviews was over and I was not able to find anything in the area where my wife signed a contract, there were some interim positions available that I was eligible to apply for only because I had done that training in 2021. And lo and behold, I am now an interim rabbi.
Wow, that's awesome.
I have a story on the other end of the spectrum that I do think is Besharet, but like not at all serious and in fact very funny. When I was the regional director for Nifty Tour, less far away though. This was actually one of the last normal things I did before COVID happened. But we went to a Nifty event hosted at Osrui in Econimowoc. And so I was flying with a group of teens. We get through the airport and everything. And like a bunch of the teens were like, oh, yeah, we saved money. We were like economy minus. So like we don't have any checked bags. And like we didn't get to choose what seat we were randomly assigned. And I was like, all right, I'll see y'all in Wisconsin. I mean, not that like I paid for a first class seat or anything, but like I paid for basic economy. I got to pick my seat and everything. And so I'm sitting there in my aisle seat and it's a full plane. And I noticed that the middle seat, still no one is sitting there. And so the last few people get on the plane and I watch as our regional president starts walking towards where I'm at the plane. And I'm like, this is a full plane. What are the odds? And she goes, hey, seat buddy. And then just sits down right next to me. And I was like, this is so funny. Like, yeah, of all the random seats she gets assigned, it's next to me. And it was a great flight. We talked and then we didn't talk. We just watched her own things. It was great.
And she paid a lot less for that ticket than you did.
And that's the funniest part about it.
That's crazy.
She was in the middle.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, but still. We all got to Econimowoc.
When I don't believe that it's a totally full flight and they tell us it is and there are people choosing seats, I hold one of the sick bags and just puff my cheeks a little bit.
I would say for my story, I think meeting my wife is a Besharet for me.
Aww.
Yeah, the collective awe.
So how'd you meet?
Well, I want to start by saying that she is absolutely the person that I'm meant to be with 100%. This is more of like a depressing Besharet. I know that tracing it back, that if my mom did not pass away, I would not have met my wife years later. Like the choices that I would have made would have been vastly different if my mom didn't pass away. And I just, you know, who decided that? Not that this is like a trade-off situation. I don't want, like, it's not a thing that I would choose to happen. But I know that that terrible thing happening is what allowed this really wonderful thing to happen. It's a really weird combination.
Yeah. You know, that's also an Isaac moment, right?
Which Isaac? Newton?
Isaac Avinu, Isaac from the Torah. When Isaac marries Rebecca, Genesis chapter, at the end of chapter 24, it says Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother, Sarah. Her being Rebecca, and she became his wife, and he loved her, and Isaac was consoled after the loss of his mother.
Oh, that's so, but that was like immediate? Is that like an immediate thing?
It's not like perfectly immediate. I mean, yeah. Sarah dies, and then Abraham sends a servant to find a wife for him, and then the servant comes back, and they get married, and then, so there is time in between.
Okay. Okay, so like because of his mom passing away, those other actions, that's awesome. Any other Besharet stories?
Just, it's funny how life works, Barak.
That it is. I do want to be sure to ask in this indie episode, what's your order? How do you rank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
I know you're going to hate me for saying this.
That's okay. And try to use like parts of the day, because I remember one time we like ordered them and Ethan was like, are you saying the order of the movies, or are you saying the order that the movies would, like, it was a confusing,
I feel like that was a Star Wars thing. Yeah.
Or Thor. Or,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
That'd have been our Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, and I think the worst one is my favorite. Temple of Doom is my favorite.
Definitely the worst one.
I acknowledge that as a movie, it's probably the second worst one. Crystal Skull. Come on. And I have such nostalgia from it, from that being the movie that my sister and I would watch over and over, and just having that just love for that movie. And then I would say Last Crusade would be my next, then Original, then Dial of Destiny, and then way, 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 way in the back is Crystal Skull.
I used to have Crystal Skull as my bottom, and then the last 2 weeks I've rewatched those first four movies, and I think somebody had mentioned in a previous episode, I think it's the nostalgia of Temple of Doom at that time, part of the original trilogy, so it's a little elevated. That was hard to watch. Just Willie Scott screaming the entire movie, complaining and screaming. Was and the opening sequence is like 10 minutes of this dance number in a club. It was not an Indiana Jones opening at all. And so I will,
except for the chasing the diamond all over the floor.
Ish. I think it tried to force some of that like Indiana Jones archaeology hunter type pieces in the middle of this hidden pathway that takes them to watch the over, like I didn't feel like very much of a, in the rewatch, it didn't feel as archaeological hunter as the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has so many puzzles and traps and mechanisms that are caused by them having to decode and do stuff that I do think all of the screaming in Temple of Doom made me really hate it in this rewatch. And I think the thing that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, there's like a few parts of it that made me go like, ugh, in the rewatch of like, why are we having this atom bomb situation in the middle and the refrigerator nonsense? And then also Shia LaBeouf swinging with monkeys through the trees was a bit off. But otherwise, I thought it was a very entertaining movie. I do. Yeah.
So what's your order, Barack?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Order is Last Crusade, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Dial of Destiny, Crystal Skull, Temple of Doom.
Wow.
Just based on my recent rewatch, I switched those last two around.
I can't rank Dial of Destiny, obviously, but you'll put it
in the middle. It's fine.
Great. I'll go in order from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Last Crusade, Crystal Skull, Temple of Doom.
Wow. I will say about Last Crusade, the Sean Connery element is so fantastic.
Yeah.
What happens at 11 o'clock? Like, I mean, there's so many. We named the dog Indiana. Yeah. So many great lines.
Oh, I might have to have you do the outro. I didn't know you had a Connery in you.
What amazing kind of imitator would I be without a Connery?
It's so fun. I think the other piece that Temple of Doom does not have that all of the other ones do have is him as a professor. Is that every other movie has some element of him in the university doing something with it as a professor, even for a short stint, that like normalizes him as somebody we can relate to. Whereas in Temple of Doom, he starts out as a nightclub, like hopper.
Some sort of a con. And
right. Like, and then he like ends up somewhere to start a mission. And also all of the other ones, those missions have already started. He is coming into the process in 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Temple of Doom is the only one where he arrives at a place and that process begins with him going to save that village to like rescue their stone.
Two is also,
nobody else is also trying to rescue the stone at that point.
Two is also the one movie where the artifact does not end up in a museum. It ends up back with the people who own it, quote unquote. And some would say that is exactly what should happen with all of the things in all of the museums.
Crystal Skull does not end up in a museum. It ends up back on the alien's head.
Oh, okay. And I will admit that I've consciously probably tried to forget that.
I mean, in so many words, Barack, I agree with why Temple of Doom, just it feels different from the other movies.
Yeah. Anything else anybody want to chat about in this Indiana episode?
I believe there was a anthology story that like something about like Millennium Falcon gets stuck in some sort of time warp and Han and Chewie crash and Chewie becomes Bigfoot and like Indiana Jones finds him or something.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that exists. That story exists somewhere. I don't remember where it is in the context, but like, yeah, it's totally out there.
That's fun.
I mean, it sounds like great fanfic.
Yeah.
Fanfic.
I'm also curious, just as Orville is the best Star Trek show out there, the librarian, the librarian or Warehouse, maybe Warehouse 13 being the sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Did you guys see either the show Warehouse 13 or the Librarian made for TV trilogy?
I have not.
I think I have heard the Librarian made fun of.
Well, Noah Weil, who you are one step away connected to.
True.
He is the lead. I thought they were just as good as Indiana Jones, just terrible CG.
I thought it was Arnold Schwarzenegger because it was Conan the Librarian.
No, that's... Well, then the show Warehouse 13 absolutely is where the Ark is stored at the end of the first one and where they crash into Crystal Skull to find their artifact at the beginning. That show was very entertaining as well, of every episode talking about this different historical artifact that had some magical power.
I will say the best Star Trek movie is Galaxy Quest.
There we go.
I've seen that one.
That was a real good movie.
I would say another thing that Indiana Jones has in common with Judaism is the archaeology. Walking down the streets of Jerusalem, you might see a cordoned off area with piles of rocks that in any other city in the world would be trash or a construction zone. But in Jerusalem, it's an archaeological site. And every bit of rubble there is sacred. Every rock could have some connection to the past. In the middle of one of the streets of Jerusalem, you can see a pillar with Proto-Hebrew writing on it that is a dedication plaque, what we would call today a plaque, to King David. And so the importance of archaeology to Indiana Jones is, I would say, on parallel with the importance of archaeology to our people.
Those are good points. There was an article written on aish.com, A-I-S-H, and it talks about sort of the Jewishness of the Indiana Jones character and trilogy. It talks about the Jewish ritual aspects that happens in the first one that we talked about with Belloc, where he creates this whole ceremony and he's got a priestly breastplate on for those eagle eye viewers. It also talks about his, hatred for the Nazis and how he fights the Nazis. Although I will say in my rewatch of Last Crusade, if he hated Nazis so much, I don't understand why he was falling for his love interest in that movie, who was like a struggling Nazi. I had a hard time in that rewatch believing that love triangle a little bit.
That's a really good point.
They also had pointed out that he, like many American Jews, struggles with the idea of faith. That in each of his movies, he's introduced to a different ideology of sorts, either religion or other ideological concept. And in each one of those, he is looking for the facts and has a hard time comparing the facts to the religious connections or what others believe to be true. And this concept of having to believe what can't be seen or believe what others tell you, or just have this faith in this concept as opposed to the I'll believe it when I see it idea, that is another connection they had made to sort of American Jews in the 20th century.
Another thing about Indiana Jones is in The Last Crusade, in his teaching moment, in the classroom scene, he says something that has become one of my primary ways of explaining the difference between the Bible and a history book. He writes the word fact on the chalkboard, and he says, archaeology is the search for fact, not truth. If it's truth you're looking for, Dr. Tyree's philosophy class is just down the hall.
Yeah.
And what I say is the Bible is the search for truth, not fact. If it's facts you're looking for, Dr. Jones's archaeology class is down the hall.
That's great.
That's amazing. That's a great quote. I thought you were going to say Rabbi Jones's class.
No, Rabbi Jones is teaching truth.
You're right. Rabbi Jones is teaching truth.
Dr. Jones is teaching fact. And I think that's also an important lesson for us, is the difference between truth and fact, because our Bible, our sacred text, the narrative that we use to guide our lives is not a history book. It is a legend. It's lore. It was created by human beings. And that does not in any way diminish its sanctity, diminish its holiness, because we are a people of story. And telling story is how humans find meaning in the world. And that's true if we're talking about Adam and Eve and Abraham and Moses and Miriam and anyone in the Bible, just as much as if we're talking about Indiana Jones, that we have what to learn from our stories. And what you brought up about pushing up against faith and philosophy and the unknown, I think is very much what an archaeologist should do. So brilliant point there about that, by the way, Barak. And it's our responsibility to push up against our story and to say, you know what, this part of the story might have worked 3,000 years ago, but it's not doing it for me now because I would rather uplift certain people than push them down. Or in the case of Indiana Jones, I would rather see archaeological artifacts go back to the people to whom they're sacred rather than to a museum that has knowingly, likely, unknowingly for sure, stolen or purchased things that are stolen.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
I like that Nazis get punched in the Indiana Jones movies.
You know, that made another Jewish relation that Indiana Jones has is he changed his name. Right? He is Henry Jones Jr. and he changed his name to go by Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. What a weird choice. I get it. He's his own person.
Okay. My question for the both of you. If you were named after your home household pet, what would your name be?
Ooh.
From when I was a kid?
Sure.
Sweet Cakes Malkin.
All right. So my dog growing up was the sweetest dog in the world.
Irrelevant. Don't drag this out, Ethan.
No. Hold no. I need to so you don't think my parents are jerks.
Okay.
And she was rescued from the streets. I think she was not treated very well and just kind of dumped because my elementary school where we found her is right next to a park. So mom literally rescued her off the street. Dog had an underbite, like sweetest dog and incredibly, incredibly ugly. So my mom named her Miskite, which is ugly in Yiddish. So I would be Miskite.
Oh, okay. First of all, you're not. Thank you. And second, my dog growing up had an underbite and bulged eyes and bowed legs. And we used to say she was so ugly that the needle went all the way around and back to cute.
Oh.
And so I would be Shadow Young.
See, that's good. I would watch that. Like that. And Indiana Jones was originally, Steven Spielberg really wanted to do a James Bond movie. And George Lucas told him that, like, you should do this character. This is your next character. And that's why, that's why Indiana Jones had this like James Bond type of feel of adventure and this love interest and et cetera. Shadow Young. That's a good adventure name. I like that.
That's real good.
Yeah. Any of those Jewish comic book artists out there, if you're looking for a character, Shadow Young.
I think there's already a Shadow.
You the can have Shadow more. Knows.
Rabbi Shadow. Great. Well, I think we all knew that Indiana Jones would someday come walking back through our door, but I don't think we imagined him leading us in this discussion of destiny versus free will. And where does Indy sit in this debate? On the one hand, he likes his choices. He is constantly making his plans up as he goes, and he is known for choosing wisely. On the other hand, it seems like everything he encounters, he already knows that it is predestined to belong in a museum. It's time to ask yourself what you believe. Perhaps you think that Indiana Jones does make an impact on the history around him. Or maybe he's just destined for a career where he is going to be constantly encountering snakes. However you choose to live your life, choose wisely. Because there's no ticket to destiny. No map showing you what you could choose. And we don't know where we'll end up because X never, ever marks our spot. Or maybe it does, and we just have to sit down and think so the solution can present itself. I think what I'm really trying to say is don't name your kid after your dog.
That was the best outro ever.
Well, I want more Indy. I want more Indiana Jones. I think I'm going to try to watch that series, although each episode is like the length of a movie. And so that's going to take me a bit to try to get through. Yeah, are you guys hoping for more Indiana Jones?
Well, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't answer that yet.
I'm going to say no, unless they do a different actor.
Oh, interesting.
I liked where I thought they were going with Crystal Skull, that Shia LaBeouf's character would take on the mantle.
And then they just Shia LaBeouf became Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
It was before that. He was bad mouthing the movie on his interview, saying that he thought it was a bad movie because he did such a bad job. And that was the bad mouthing. And so even before all of his instances, he was taken off the script. But I enjoy it. I enjoy the character. I wouldn't hate like a prequel situation where we get a younger person going back and we get some older adventures. I do think Nazis really helped to make the Indiana Jones character a little stronger.
I would love to see young Indiana Jones, not the series that they already made.
Yeah.
But I would love to see a different actor. I mean, it would be really funny if the guy who played Han Solo
that's funny.
Oh, Ansel. Yeah.
He didn't do a great job.
I was really disappointed that Free Solo was not a Star Wars movie.
You know who I would take? You know who I would take? Although I don't think he has the anger or the like, but he's got the good, strong emotional stuff. I would take Zac Efron as a young Indiana Jones.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would do that.
I don't know that Indiana Jones takes his shirt off enough for Zac Efron to accept the role.
Oh, 100%. It's not the years, honey. It's the mileage. Like, he is shirtless, I think, in every... He took his shirt off in Temple of Doom. I think he's shirtless in pretty much every movie.
Oh, well, I know his shirt is open in a lot of Temple of Doom.
It's enough. No, it's removed for the big ritual.
Oh, to take his heart out.
Yeah.
And it's really, like, I really was sad that Madonna did not do the soundtrack. Open your heart to me.
Oh, my God. All right, I think that's where we could wrap it up. So that'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Vogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. This episode was supported in part by JUICE. JUICE, which stands for the Jewish Comics Experience, is a full-day convention and preview night that brings together fans, creators, and industry professionals to explore the rich history and contributions of diverse Jewish creators and content in the comics medium. JUICE is created and hosted by the Center for Jewish History in New York City. If you are interested in attending or to learn more, visit JUICE.org. That's JEWCE.org. Also, visit the Center for Jewish History at cjh.org for new information on the institution and their partners, who are all involved in the upcoming exhibit, The Museum and Laboratory of the Jewish Comics Experience, opening in October 2023 at the Center for Jewish History. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And because this is a podcast, it'll sound better if you don't look, Marion. Keep your eyes shut. This is an audio format.
Welcome to Torah Smash.
Yeah. The Torah smashes you.